What a nice gig cast! Oh, fuck.
Start.
Can I carry on?
Yep. I've forgotten how to do introductions, so let's see. I'm Fox.
Hi, I'm Chris.
Yes, it's been a while since I've done one of these, so I'm going to talk awkwardly for a little bit, and then we'll kind of get into a groove and just have conversational stuff on the go.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll leave it all to you.
Oh, God. I hadn't factored that in.
Oh, talk, oh, Fox, talk.
I'm trying.
Be interesting.
I can possibly manage charming, maybe even awkward, but I don't know about interesting.
I think charming will probably be okay.
Well, we were going to talk about video games, I think. Does that sound okay? Yeah. I mean, we could talk about... Oh, wait, you also want to talk about D&D, and I was going to talk a bit about game design.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, it could just be, like, you know, games in general sort of, discussion.
Well, I mean, it is a geek cast, so I suppose...
Yes.
Anything covered under that banner.
A geek stuff podcast in general. I mean, that sounds good.
Yeah, that works for me. It gives me a broad enough banner. On my list of topics, I wanted to have a moan about the Firefall beta. I also wanted to talk about GTA 5 and GTA Online and games coming to Linux, and possibly also what we've been playing lately. Maybe we should start with that.
Okay, cool.
What have you been playing lately?
I have been playing Deus Ex Human Revolution for the second time lately. I don't know if have you ever played that one?
I haven't played it. I bought it in the hope of playing it and just never got around to it. Still sitting in Steam, much like many, many other games, like Max Payne 3, for example. Haven't played that yet. Bought it when it was on sale a while back. But I've heard such good things that I think I want to play that.
Yes. my Steam library is about the same. I have... About half my Steam library is actually greyed out, indicating I haven't played it yet. I haven't downloaded it yet, which, you know, kind of means I haven't played it yet because I've never formatted my computer. But yes, Deus Ex, the new Deus Ex, well, new-ish, it came out about 2 years ago.
New for us old fogies.
Yes, new for, like, new in the sense that, you know, it's post, you know, 2000.
Yes.
If you like. Yes. Yeah, it's quite good. It's quite fun. The only massive glaring issue with it is that I'm not sure if you've read much about Deus Ex, but
boss fights.
The boss fights. The boss fights are my only massive gripe with it. I mean, this is actually my second playthrough. On my first playthrough, I got to what I thought was probably the last area, but if I remember correctly, something happens in life and I just stopped playing. I just stopped playing it and just got distracted.
I know what you mean. That happens to me with some games. It's just kind of like you put it down for like a few days and then a week becomes 2 weeks and then you haven't played it in 6 months. And it's just like, can I be bothered to get back into it? I do this with Fallout New Vegas. I've played quite a lot of it and I pick it up. I'm just like, I'm just not invested in the setting anymore. It's still a good setting, but I'm just, you know, kind of checked out.
Yeah, I'm the same. And the more you leave it, the sort of more you become detached from it, and the more you sort of like forget what you're doing. I mean, I'm the same with New Vegas. I've got if I find Fallout New Vegas, I think I've got I'll be under RPG surely. That would be the yes. I've got like 14 hours in New Vegas, and I mean, I've never completed it. I've got quite far in it, I think.
I haven't completed it at all, but I...
Yeah.
Problem for me with completing it was, sorry, I sort of looked at them in this case, so you could resolve it this way, this way, this way. It's like, I don't want to do any of those. None of those appeal to me. It generally revolves around who gets to control... About who gets to control New Vegas. Like, I don't care. Dear God, why would I want that crap all? I wouldn't want it if it was normal Vegas. I mean... Vegas is horrible.
I mean, that's kind of a problem with a lot of games, I think, just in the sense that when some games reach its conclusion, the story starts to get less interesting and starts to get like a little bit predictable in a way, I suppose. And I suppose that's just because you can sort of feel it coming to a close.
Yeah.
And like the idea that the game is coming to closure, you become a bit like, but it's going to be over soon. Like, what's the point in investing if it's going to be over soon? I know that's kind of a terrible way to look at it.
No, I think I know what you mean. At the start of a game, you've got...
With some games I play.
At the start of the game, you've got kind of like a whole world in front of
you. It's all fresh at the start of the game, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's full of possibilities. As you go through, you basically cut down possibilities until there's only one remaining, and that's the ending you get. So the closer you get to the end, the fewer options exist. And that's just not fun.
Yeah, and it just starts to become a lot. It just starts to become like very sort of on rails in a way, doesn't it?
Eventually, you just get railroaded to the end. It's hard.
It's hard to see.
A game that doesn't do that. I was talking about someone on Reddit. I was talking about this with someone. Alpha Protocol. I don't know if you've ever played it.
Oh, the only thing that bothers me about Alpha Protocol is the awful reviews it's getting. But I've read in quite a few sources that Alpha Protocol is actually a brilliant game. It's just the gameplay is shit.
I honestly didn't have any real problems with the gameplay.
I've heard the actual story.
Oh, the story's amazing, but
oh, really?
I read all these reviews and things saying the game's a buggy mess.
Yeah, I've heard stories.
Compared to New Vegas, for example, I didn't have any problems with bugs. I don't get what's going wrong with people's versions of it. Because the game I played was just fine. New Vegas, on the other hand, bugs out all the damn time. But I've got to say...
I
go for it.
Sorry, we have lives, so yeah. Things happening in the background. Right.
I was going to say that with the Alpha Protocol, the interesting thing about it was I didn't feel like I was someone kind of steering an avatar down a narrative, kind of like this will happen and this will happen. Instead, I felt more like, okay, I'm doing this, and then stuff happens, but not like there was a very big disconnect that created a real sense of player agency, that a disconnect between, how can I put this? You know, in lots of games where there's a good way to do things, a bad way to do things, and if things are a bit more complicated, there might be a grey area. But ultimately, you know that if I do this, I'll get the good ending, that, the bad.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
In this case, there was just kind of stuff that happened. And from what I can tell, the game can vary drastically based on your interactions with various different characters in the game. Like, I didn't know this, but the final boss can be a different person entirely. Some people don't even meet some of the characters because it just closes off
that
bit of the story, and that never happens. It gives a real sense of, okay, I'm just I'm sort of going through this, trying to make the best choices possible, as opposed to, okay, right, here's a setting, let's navigate through it. Okay, that's a good option, I want to be a good person, so I'm going to do that. Not going to support them because they seem like dicks. These people eat babies, so I'm not going to support them. And these guys are paragons of virtue, so we'll go with them. Or the opposite, if you prefer to go the negative route. It's just, I don't know, sloppy story design, I feel. And the thing you talk about where you kind of limit trimming off...
So many games suffer from that. I mean...
Hello?
Yeah, sorry. It seems like you broke up a little bit there.
Ah, sorry about that.
Hello?
I'm still here. I'm getting a bit of lag, though.
Ah. Sorry?
Getting a bit of lag.
Yeah, seems like it. Oh well, we'll deal with them, I suppose. We'll hopefully get better. But yes, like following on from your discussion, with what you're saying, like it just seems like a lazy way to do storytelling. It's like I hate games that like say that give you like complex moral choices, like Mass Effect, where the only choice Mass Effect gives you is good guy or complete dick. You know, and it's just that's not a choice. You know that you're it is a choice in the sense that you're choosing between one or the other, but the choices are so like.
But it's not really a choice.
They're so extreme that, you know, it's good guy dick. There's no sort of gray area. There's no sort of if I do that, you know, I might harm this person, but I might save all these other people or something like that. There's no like sort of gray choices. There's no real choices that are. That don't feel like an arbitrary, you know, sort of like system to like, you know, make one bar increase or one bar decrease. Like one game, I think that does.
Go ahead.
One game, I think that really well is. Have you ever played The Witcher before?
No, I've heard a lot about it, but I can't really get into fantasy settings, sadly. But I've heard good things about it, and I've heard that it's got a lot of grey areas.
Yeah, it does. I mean, the grey areas in The Witcher 2, especially, which... I'm not really played much of The Witcher 1, because, to be honest, it's it was made in such a low budget, and the combat... The graphics and voice acting just feel very sort of like, you know... like very sort of cheap, and it just like,
well, you tried.
Yeah, exactly. The presentation, what I'm trying to say is the presentation isn't that great, and I know that's a bit superficial of me, but that does actually distract from the whole experience. But The Witcher 2, they massively addressed.
No, I know what you mean. I was going to say the game Wasteland for me does that. I've heard it's a great game, but it's from 1988. The graphics just mean that it could be the greatest game in the world. I just can't get past that.
Yes, exactly. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I don't think graphics are everything, you know, really. But to be honest, like, if I'm playing a game from like 1988, or like even like the old Final Fantasies, which if I tried to go back and play them now, especially like 7, for instance, which it just looks, you know, it just doesn't hold up. I mean, but interestingly though, like I can easily go back and play 6 or 5, which are for the SNES. Because I think I think when people try to do like, you know, 3D, and it doesn't work very well, it just looks awful.
Yeah. I think you've got to work with the medium. I was thinking of a game that I would imagine still holds up in that respect would be 13, as in XIII.
Oh yes.
Do you remember that game?
Yeah. Yes.
I bet. Brilliant. I would be willing to bet that the visuals of it would hold up, because even though it would still be low polygon, they used an art style that meant that it would age quite well. But other games,
yes,
it's just like, oh, you tried to do something that was cutting edge at the time, which of course now looks like crap, and so one of your big selling points was, yeah, it looks great. It doesn't anymore.
But yeah, exactly. There's other games that do that as well, like, for example, Wind Waker, the Legend of Zelda game. That was cel-shaded, and it looks fantastic. It's about 8 years old now, I think, and it looks fantastic by today's standards.
Yeah, something like that.
But if you look at the sequel to that, the sequel looks even worse by today's standards, because, I mean, at the time, the sequel was like groundbreaking. I'm talking about Twilight Princess.
Yeah.
At the time, that was groundbreaking, because the graphics were, you know, as best as it could be for the time.
Yeah.
But because of the art style, it just doesn't hold up, you know, in today's standards, to Wind Waker, which has had this beautiful sort of cel-shaded, graphic cell, which still looks amazing, even now.
I think that Super Mario Galaxy would probably hold up, and I would imagine Super Mario Sunshine would as well, but for me, Super Mario 64, no.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, we are starting to, like, plateau now, and, it's especially in the sort of PS2 era, sort of going forward, we are starting to plateau, because the graphics are getting to the point now where I don't think they can realistically get that much better now, to be honest. Like, without having to sacrifice...
I would disagree. I would think they can get better, but we need to get a lot better at doing graphics before we can make a significant push again. That is to say, we need possibly quantum computing or something similar. Either that, or we need cleverer ways of compressing the amount of calculation needed to be done. Because I think we can do more, but at the moment, if you think about it, quote-unquote realistic shooters are still basically cartoons.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I think that's, like, the more realistic, inverted commas, graphics get, the more complex they are to, you know, develop, and the more talent is actually needed to, you know...
Yeah.
To make the game, and the more money it costs to make games. And I think that's going to have a huge sort of knock-on effect to the quality of games that ultimately get produced, which is a bit of a shame, really.
Well, I think it would affect games that are trying to push the envelope, but on the other side, the plateau is kind of handy in terms of, I'm loving how many engines are powered by Unity.
Unity?
I don't know if you've got much experience with Unity.
If you give me some examples of games, I'll probably pick up.
Yeah, the Unity engine?
Yeah, if you give me some examples of games that use it.
Games that run on it. Surgeon Simulator 2013 runs on it.
I never played it, to be honest.
I thought you might have seen some screenshots or something. But also, Wasteland 2 runs on it.
I've seen some screenshots, but I've not had much exposure to the engine, to be honest.
I'm trying to remember some of the other games, but if you look it up, basically there's loads of different games that run on it, all sorts of different kinds. And I think it's really cool that this one tool provides a basis for cross-platform games that aren't like the best graphics in the world, but it's not like, yeah, well, you know, it's the best we can do. It's more like, if you play to this, the strengths of this art style, you can do some really beautiful things.
Yeah, it's like almost like quite a cartoony looking sort of engine. Yeah, it's quite nice actually.
Let's see. Let me pull up a list of Unity games. If, of course, my browser decides to respond. I hear Keith strokes. Unity game engine. Scrolly, scrolly, scrolly. What have we got? Yeah. As of Unity 4.2, released in July this year, it supports iOS, Android, Windows, BlackBerry 10, OS X, Linux, web browsers, Flash, PS3, Xbox 360, Windows Phone 8, and Wii U.
Hmm, that's quite a, you know, extensive list of platforms. Yeah, it looks like a...
Let's see, I'm seeing...
Oh, which like, games... there's a Temple Run as well that uses Unity. Endless Space uses Unity. Yeah.
But there's lots and lots of games that you would have heard of. Let me see what we've got. If I scroll down a little further. Kerbal Space Program runs on it.
Awesome.
The new Dreamfall game that's not out yet is running on it. And of course, Wasteland 2 is running on it. interestingly, Max and the Magic Marker ran on it. I didn't know that. That's kind of cool.
So not like so not like AAA plus games.
That's not even a full list, though, because...
Yeah, so not like...
Well, I would say... Do you remember how in the PS2 era, you'd get sort of middle-tier games?
Like, for instance?
Well, that's kind of the point. I can't remember the title. So it tended to be things that were not AAA, but they weren't, like, the crappiest thing ever. They were just sort of somewhere in the middle. Mm. There were loads of them. Like, various different shooters and platformers and... Just because the cost of game development had sort of leveled out that lots of people could make stuff. Mm. I like Unity in terms of it's good enough that you can rely on lots of machines being able to run it, as well as all the other platforms. It's just the fact that it doesn't require the best hardware in the world, but also you can do quite nice visuals on it. Not like sort of this is the latest AAA game, but you can do stuff that's good enough that it doesn't have the problem of I can't get past the art style. Kind of like you mentioned with the first Witcher game. It's just like, you got to get past that. I feel that this has created sort of something that you can just take that out of the equation and just learn how to make a good game. I think it's also available for free up to a certain number of licenses.
Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I do like the whole...
The pro version is available for $1,500 and the regular version is free to download.
Hmm. I do like the whole sort of like indie games like market that sort of surfaced in the last 5 or 6 years or so.
Yeah, something like that.
Like I do like that. There's I do like there's like you know genuinely amazing games that are coming out that you know have like sort of very low hardware requirements and are also sold like very cheaply as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I'm games like that... like games like Torchlight and stuff.
I've heard good things about it. Again, fantasy type thing, not for me, but I've heard that it's basically what Diablo 3 was supposed to be.
Yes, exactly. Like it's just like games like Torchlight. There's like an interesting sort of like you know stealth game called Warp. Don't know if you heard of that.
It doesn't ring a bell, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's basically like a top down stealth game where you control like a little alien, and you can sort of like warp into you can sort of warp between rooms and you can sort of warp into people's bodies and. You know, like eat them if it minces out, like you know, like the sort of those little things from Alien. I can't remember what they're called, but the...
that sounds a lot like Messiah, where one would play as a cherub called Bob from back in the day in the 90s.
Mm. Again, I never heard of it. So
yeah, I sound mental saying that, but look it up. It was an old game, but it was very strange. And I remembered another game from Unity that isn't in the list. Do you know how there's going to be a remake of the first Oddworld game?
Oh, yes.
Abe's Odyssey. That's running on Unity.
Ah, yes. It's going to be in Unity.
Yep.
That's pretty awesome. Ah, that's quite exciting.
Well, the point being just that it means that you've got an engine that's good enough that you can compete with everyone else. You're not being held back by not being able to afford that bit of the development. The thing that's holding you back is whether you can actually make a good game or not.
Mm. Yeah, which is I think is very, very important.
And I like that we can take that out of the equation. Because, I mean, I like it when I can play games that, it's a case of they're trying something new. But if they're being held back, and it's a case of, well, it would have been good except... and that's really tragic, you know?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, it's great that they barrier for entry to getting into, you know, gaming. It looks like ever getting into the games market has been lowered quite significantly in the last sort of 5-6 years. And that's great, because we're starting to see, like, really sort of innovative
really
games,
cool because...
like Braid and things like that.
Yeah.
Have you played Braid?
I haven't played it. I've got it in my Steam library.
Games like Braid, it just, it's well worth playing. It's a really sort of great sort of, you know, puzzler slash, you know, platformer. And it's like, games like that just probably wouldn't have existed, you know, like about 10 years ago. We probably couldn't have that sort of, like, just like people would just, you know, saying, hey, I've got this great game idea, but, you know, I can't really afford a big development studio. And just using, like, you know, a cheap engine like Unity or whatever to do it. And it's great that like there's also platforms in the form of Steam, and I'm not sure how many console games you play, but there's it's great that the new sort of next gen consoles, like by next gen I mean the Xbox 360 and the PS3, have like online libraries that, you know, exist, and you can just download like these indie games. And it sort of removes the sort of barrier for entry in terms of like getting your game out to, you know, shops like in like physical format. And it's really good. I mean, gaming has become
just really
exciting because of it, I think.
I'm liking how in some ways these things are democratizing or possibly meritocratizing, if that's a real word. Things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I mean, I remember back, say, 10 years ago. Do you remember when we had introversion pushing the envelope with things like Darwinia and the like? That may have been 2005, but yeah, back then, they were taking risks for that, but they were coding their stuff from scratch. Well, they, Chris was, because back then, at least, there was one developer, and it was Chris DeLay. And, sorry, just completely blanked on my point. I was going to say that back then, they took the risk, and they nearly folded as a company on a few occasions, but it was like a big leap of faith. But these days, I don't know, I'm liking, as you said, we've got so many more interesting things are happening these days than there were 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are complaining about gaming like nowadays, and I think to a certain extent, I mean, the complaints are legit. I mean, gaming is becoming more and more saturated with just, you know, rehash shooters like Call of Duty and things like that. And gaming is getting to a point where it is kind of like all about the graphics, and in a lot of cases, and gaming, you know, games are being sort of like dumbed down a little bit. I mean, look at like Final Fantasy 13, where it was the first Final Fantasy game in what, 5 years or something like that, and it basically, you know, basically all it was a pretty corridor with a battle system that you can pretty much just push X over and over again to win. And it has, like gaming has been...
Gee, that sounds fun.
Yeah. It's actually not a bad game. It's quite a pretty game, but really, when you compare it to, like, the previous entries in the series, it has been dumbed down quite a lot. So there's lots to complain about gaming on that front, but there's also a lot to celebrate, and with these, like, sort of fantastic, like, sort of niche games coming out that are, you know, cheaper and easier to run, and sometimes, you know, I'd argue bolder, I suppose, like... Just by virtue of being cheaper, they're just bolder games. You know, they're trying concepts that are, you know, like maybe, you know, like they're trying concepts where, if they did it in like a AAA title that costs like, you know, thousands to make and it collapsed, it'd probably bankrupt the company. But yeah, but because it's like an indie game, they can sort of afford to get away with it, and that's just really exciting. That. You know, there's kind of no limit to people's like creativity now, because they can just do it, which is just great, I think.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens when Steam opens up their platform in terms of. So I'm assuming you've read about how they want to make it so that instead of going through Greenlight, it's just kind of almost an API.
Yeah. I obviously know about Greenlight. I think that's quite a fantastic sort of like feature. But yeah, I mean, I think once the open, like, I think once it's fully been opened, like in the way that, you know, the Android like marketplace has opened up to everything, I think that'll be pretty exciting. Yeah, I mean, I very much think it'll still have to be regulated a little bit. But yeah,
Yeah, I prefer things to be a bit curated, but we'll see what happens. I was also going to say, to count this, as you said, with the rise of, well, with the lowering of the barrier to entry, we also get things like the revival of things that used to exist in some way. That is to say, things like Dark Souls, where the game is intentionally difficult, and that now has a market because you've got digital services that can distribute to people, so you don't have to get copies in shops and things like that. It's just a case of you can spread word of mouth online. You can get this game here. If you don't like it, well, you knew what you were getting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the whole like online distribution, though, that is part of it. That is very much a driver for like sort of indie games, because like really, you know, Game obviously went into administration earlier this year, or was it last year? I can't remember. And the reason for that is gaming.
I don't
has,
even remember. It was a while back.
Yeah, it was a while back, wasn't it? It's reopened now. But the problem with that is like gaming
why would you
is just
bother,
not.
Though?
Yeah, exactly. Like gaming is just not. It's becoming increasingly less sustainable. As like, you know, I don't know, just
yeah,
as
a
like
tangible
a
thing,
where, yeah, as a shop with that, where you can like sort of go in and buy physical games, because really people want to push like the big games, like, you know, your Call of Duty's, your, you know, Sims and stuff like that, and like it's a shame that
stuff that you can guarantee will sell a lot of units.
Yeah, exactly. It's a shame that because of that, like smaller games just aren't getting exposure. And I think things like Steam and stuff like that are, you know, very much sort of like helping with that. I think Steam is probably the best thing that's ever happened to PC gaming, probably ever. Just because it can do that. Just because
it's kind
it
of amusing
sort of,
how it used to be.
Yeah, I think we all remember the GIFs when Half-Life 2 first came out. You know, and Steam was just,
oh,
you know,
God, Steam was just so useless back then.
Yes, yeah, just looked upon as this crap. Like why would people want to do this sort of thing? But now it's just, you know, it's just got to the point now where it's just normal. I mean, I can't even imagine buying a PC game in a shop anymore. You know, it's like, what, why would I do that?
No,
Yeah,
more stuff to hold on to and have to track patches for, and ugh.
Exactly.
That sounds like
exactly
a lot of fun.
Yeah, exactly, and like, you know, it's really cool as well how they can do, you know, sales as well, like every week.
Indeed.
It's twice a week, isn't it? Yeah. It's like twice a week now, isn't it? It's Wednesday.
I'm not quite sure.
Wednesday.
I don't check that often, but
it's Wednesday. They have like a midweek sale on Wednesday and on Saturday.
I love the things both in terms of sales and in terms of what they're discovering about economic theory with regards to sales. But what I was going to say is, I don't want to convey that it's just a Steam circle jerk. It's just that Steam are the only ones who are doing a good job of it at the moment in terms of a unified distribution service, I feel. I think you saw it, the recent EA sale.
Oh,
where you could get
yeah,
a load of games for
the humble bundle.
Of course, some of them you have to redeem on Origin. Yeah, but some you have to redeem on Origin, and I did that, and I was just—I'm still amazed how Origin is this awful. Because I don't have a problem with having competition in the like the digital distribution market, but I want competition. I don't want you've got to use this instead. I want something where it's a case of our competitor's good, but you should try us because. Instead, it seems to be more like, yeah, well, you can get these games here or you can bugger off.
Yeah, like, are they actually cheaper or what? And, like, what's the point? I suppose, like, some, like, retailers are doing that.
I've heard good things about GOG.
Yeah, like, GOG and Green Man Gaming.
Yeah, I've heard of
pretty
that.
Pretty good sometimes. There's been a lot of instances where I find things cheaper on, like, Green Man Gaming than in Steam.
Yeah.
And I've generally used it, but it's lacking, like, kind of, like, the fully integrated, like, thing that Steam has, where, you know, there's a store you can buy games, and the library's also there as well. So you buy from the store, and it instantly goes into your library, and it's just all like self-contained, and it's just really easy. Whereas with Green Man Gaming, you have to, like, you know, download it and then activate it on Steam or whatever.
Yeah.
Or like you even get to like really bad point where there is no activation on Steam, and you have this just like game that's on your machine which isn't like tied to Steam, and it just. Like it almost feels like if it's not tied to Steam, it's not really fair. If you know what I mean.
I think
it's,
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I might as well have pirated it at that stage.
Yeah, you just expect things to be tied. Sorry.
at that point, it's a case of, I might as well have pirated it because I've got to look after the damn files.
Exactly, exactly. And I just dislike how Steam, it's all, it's Steam, I click buy, then I, you know, click pay, I click buy and then pay, and it just appears in my library, and that's it. It just downloads, and I don't have to do anything else. I don't have to, like, you know, fidget about with install files. I don't have to, like, you know, try and, like, find the XE after it's installed. I just have to,
it just works,
there.
It patches itself.
It's just become, like, PC gaming has just become easier than ever.
And, of course, the thing I love about the way Steam works, like, I can delete the files if I need the space, and then just reinstall them later.
Mm. And your save games will get, and your save games are still there as well, which
exactly.
is great.
Whereas I tried with Origin.
Like, they are
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I was just gonna say, there's times where I've looked at a game and gone, I could pirate this. And going, you know what? I'll just buy it instead, because it's easier to pay for it on Steam, and have it managed by Steam than it is to pirate it.
It is, and this
you know
is
I mean?
Precisely
it's a testament to how good it is.
Well, this is
that
something
that I can do that. I can just buy it on Steam, and it's.
I seem to recall Gabe saying something about how it's. Piracy is a service problem rather than a pricing problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or something, or sort of words to that effect, anyway. The problem I had with Origin was I tried to install The Sims 3, I clicked install, it installed it, I clicked play it, and I was like, no, there's a new patch for it. And I was like, well, why didn't you just install that when you installed it? So I installed the patch, and it fell over once, but eventually it got installed. And it's like, oh, wait, there's also some content to download before we play. It's like, okay, now I need you to log in here. But I'm already logged into Steam. Logged into Origin. It uses the same account. No. You've got to log in. And
no.
That didn't work properly.
Yeah.
And it's just like, why is this so difficult? And people have said, well, Steam used to be this bad in the beginning. Yes, in the beginning. And Origin didn't launch into a vacuum. They could see what
exactly.
Steam was
in
doing
the beginning.
And see the mistakes, so they didn't have to make the same mistakes. But they made them anyway. It's not like, makes you think of, with regards to. Developing countries, where it's a case of they don't have tape cassettes, then CDs, then MP3s. They just, if they haven't had the stuff before, they just ditch that stuff and leapfrog over it, because why would you make the same mistakes twice if people have already made the mistakes, learned the lessons? You just go with the new way of doing things.
Exactly.
And
I mean, if Origin I want to be like a genuine competitor to Steam, they have to, like, you know, offer something that Steam doesn't have, or offer something like over and above what Steam has, but at the moment Origin's offering something less than what Steam has, and I just think it's a huge
You've got to at least have feature parity.
It's a huge, like, you know, shot in the foot for EA that their new games aren't coming out in Steam.
Yeah,
it's like, well, there have been times where I've gone, oh, I could buy
half
so-and-so.
The time it's this case of, I guess I'm not playing that then.
Yeah, like I when Dead Space 3 came out, right, I like, the Dead Space series is, like, it's quite a good series. I quite enjoy it. You know, it's quite fun. But I haven't played Dead Space 3 yet, and the reason I haven't played Dead Space 3 is because it's not on Steam. Like, it's generally been a case of, like, okay, I could play Dead Space 3, but I have to use Origin, and I had to, like, baff about this, like, okay, it's not hard, per se. It's, like, it's quite easy to work out. It's, like, you can get there in the end. It's just a faff to, like, get all working, you know? And it doesn't have this, like, the simplicity that Steam does.
Indeed.
That it's just there, and you buy it, and it's in your library.
I'm somewhat amazed that EA haven't just thrown money at the problem until it goes away.
Mm.
I mean, they could afford to just pay for a load of developers to hack on this until it was in a good state, but they're just not doing it.
Yeah, it's just quite... It's quite a disappointment. It's especially, like, a huge disappointment where...
Indeed.
EA have a lot of good developers under their belt. It's such a shame that some of the best games are coming out on a platform that just isn't really fit for purpose in today's markets, which is a shame, really, but oh well.
Totally true. If it was 10 years ago, it would have been a perfectly fine platform. We'd have been like, that's
exactly.
pretty good,
it's
I guess.
Now, and there's Steam on other services.
Ago,
if Origin came out 10 years ago and there's no Steam, we'd probably look at it and go, oh, this is interesting and new, and this is quite cool. I can have my game library, I can just buy games that appears in my library. That's quite cool, I guess, and it manages patches and everything. But today, where it just doesn't hold up, it's just like, Origin, why would I bother?
Exactly.
Although, on the sort of EA front, I would like to kind of talk about what EA had done recently with the Humble Bundle.
I'm listening.
Which I think has been, I saw it on Reddit the other day. It was like, it was posted to from R Gaming, and I saw it, and I for a brief second, I kind of thought that it was an April Fool's joke.
I know what you mean.
And then I realized it wasn't April.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah. It's like, oh, holy crap! They're offering, you know, what's it, 7 like really, really like AAA games for essentially $5.
Yeah, precisely.
And I was genuinely quite impressed. Yeah.
This was something that I thought was good in terms of The Sims. I wanted to buy The Sims 3 on Steam, but even when I was reduced, it's like, that's not good enough. I want the game, but I'm just not going to get that level of value out of it. I'm not paying however much it was reduced to. It may have been a tenner or something, but it was just like, I don't want to play the game that much. I want to play $5 worth of it or something.
Yeah.
Because whilst I could get hopelessly addicted, that doesn't leave me feeling satisfied with my life. But I want to be able to have it as a playground to sort of mess around with. And
yeah,
but when it came up in this bundle, it was a case of finally I could do that. I mean, it's not on Steam, but it's on Origin, which hopefully, if they're doing things like this, hopefully they want Origin to stick around, because this is the other problem. You don't want to be Games for Windows Live or whatever came before it and whatever will come after, where it's a case of no one wants to sign up for it because it's just like, is it going to be here in 2 weeks kind of thing.
God.
Ah, 2 weeks is a bit little. 2 months.
Sorry, you just made me feel quite depressed after you mentioned Games for Windows Live. Oh, God. I mean, the worst thing is about Games for Windows Live is some games that already have that are already sort of DRM'd, if that's a term. Yeah, I'll go with that. DRM'd. That are already DRM'd on Steam.
Oh, God.
Have a Games for Windows Live layer on top of it.
Arkham City.
And it's like, I don't understand. Yeah. I've already registered on Steam. Like, yeah, Arkham City was one of them, where it's like, to save, I had to log on to Games for Windows Live, and it would constantly shut down and say, you need to update, you know, and like, I'd be like, just do that through Steam. You've got like a nice platform that works in Steam to do all your updating and patching. Like, why do you need to log into Games for Windows Live and another system altogether, which is clunky and just doesn't really work that well, you know? If you've only got Steam like underneath it to do all that for you.
Worse than that, I bought the DLC for Arkham City, and it works through Games for Windows Live. Like, when you buy it, they would just give you a code, and then you're supposed to then put that code into Games for Windows Live, and it downloads entirely separately from Steam. And I think I don't know if I've uninstalled the game, but I think it's still sitting there as a file, because when you uninstall the game, I don't think it uninstalls that. So it's just further mess.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, I can sort of see why Microsoft want to do it. They clearly want to, you know. Actually, while we're at this, I'm going to have a moan about Microsoft as well, because I think Microsoft have done some awful things recently.
Go for it.
They've not done awful things. They've done great things, but in an awful way. You know, with Games for Windows Live, I can see what they're trying to do. I can see that they're trying to sort of like they've got this great service in Xbox Live. And I can see what they're trying to do in the sense that they're trying to transfer that, not so much transfer, but you know, have that on like Windows as well.
Build on so, that
like,
success.
To sort of my both services up, which like, I thought was a really cool idea. You know, I could have a gamer tag on Xbox Live, and also have the same gamer tag on Games Windows Live. But the way they implemented it was just so messy, and like, it's not as if it couldn't work. It couldn't have worked if they actually tried to make it like more intuitive and just a bit better. It's just the way they did it was just horrible. And what annoys me about Microsoft is that seems to be what they're doing just in general now. I mean, like Windows 8 is a great example where they just I think Windows 8 is a great idea. I think the idea of having like, you know, a separate like sort of interface on like top of like the desktop interface, which is the same sort of like, you know, it's the same sort of like interface as you know, their tablets and their phones, and you can have apps that run across all three. I think that's a great idea, but just the way they've done it has just been so messy that it just hasn't taken off, and that's just a shame. It really is, because there's some great ambition there to like do something really really to do something really good, but it's just like the developers are just like kind of blind to what people want. In a way, and they're kind of blind about how to like sort of market it.
I think they often don't think about how can I put this? The role that Windows has. The people who use it, that is to say, like the main market for it. I don't mean sort of people like you and I who kind of power users. I mean, sort of the fact that it's in offices everywhere, that kind of thing. It trying to shift away from the desktop metaphor, for example. People are only just starting to grasp the desktop metaphor in some places. Why would you change that at this stage? It doesn't seem sensible in terms of, if that's one of the core products to the business, why would you mess with it?
It's not even that. It's also the fact that, like for me, Windows 8, it works. I use Windows 8 here. I think it's great. I think it's really nice. I think the new start menu is, yeah, it's different, but I think it's quite pretty. It looks quite nice. But the only problem is that I mean, just tell you a story about the first time that I installed Windows 8. Like what really shocked me when I first installed Windows 8 is the fact that it installs and then when you launch it for the first time, it launches on the desktop, and there's no indication about how you get to start menu at all. Like there's no click here to begin. Like, click here to get to start menu. It's like, well, I only know how to get to start menu because I've seen videos, because I've, read up on Windows 8, for months and months and months and months before it came out.
Yeah.
I only know how it works because of that, you know? And even I struggle to grasp it a little bit. Just, yeah. Like, there's one time, I remember I was looking for the control panel, and it just wasn't intuitive at all. I mean, ended up having to Google how to get the control panel because it wasn't clear how you get it, and it just seems like they're doing these they're doing great things, they're doing great ambitious things, but they're just not going about it in the right way, and that's such a shame. It really is. I suppose a narrative example is Windows Phone 8. I mean, I use Windows Phone. I think it's fantastic. I think the interface is miles above what Apple and Android or God forbid RIM are doing. I think it's beautiful, but it just seems like the way they've done it, it just isn't getting off the ground. In the way I think it probably should.
I think with regards to Windows Phone at the moment,
seems like they haven't gone about it.
I would argue that trying to push things in that area is just a waste of time. I'm not suggesting it will always be, just at the moment the market isn't ready for a transition to a Windows-style phone. Personally, I don't think it ever will be, but if I was trying to launch that sort of thing, doing it now when you've got Android and iOS as the two big boys, unless you're able to do it better and more cheaply and put it in loads of hands, it's just not going to be the de facto standard. And, unless you can do that, which clearly they can't. They've got loads of cash, but they can't do what they did with the original Xbox, where it's a case of we're just willing to take a huge loss year on year just to force a foot into the door kind of thing. Should we switch to talking about video games?
Yes. Yes, why not?
And we're back.
Yes, after some technical problems.
Indeed.
Sorry about that.
Yes. And I don't know whether having a full bladder counts as a technical problem.
Well... Yeah, I suppose it's a technical problem caused by your body.
Well, I mean, how can I put this? Sort of the fuller my bladder is, the more lag we get. Somehow they must be linked. I don't think that's how maths works.
Like maths sort of impregnates itself onto computers and stuff. there was quite a big lag though, so you must be quite desperate. So it's a good job you stopped for a break.
Indeed.
Yes.
Right. Back to what we've been playing lately.
Yes, you were talking about Assassin's Creed.
Yes.
And I was trying to have a conversation about Assassin's Creed, but I was obviously very conscious about the lag. So all I managed was yes, it's a fun game. I'm going to be a bit more I'm going to try and be a bit more interesting when I talk about Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I like Assassin's Creed. I think it's just very fun. It's just very interesting what it does. It sort of places you in a big city, and you can sort of sneak around and just pretty much do what you want. And it's almost like a ye olde GTA in a sort of sense.
In some ways, yes.
Yeah.
But I really like. I haven't played the first one. I've played Assassin's Creed 2, Brotherhood, Revelation, and 3.
Not so good. I have not played. Is three not so good?
Three is dreadful.
Is it really?
Oh, it's terrible.
In what way?
Well, do you remember exploring cities in Assassin's Creed 2 or any of the other ones?
Yeah,
you get these beautiful, sprawling historical cities. Well, in Assassin's Creed 3, you get Boston and New York. That is to say, when they were still small wooden houses and mud streets.
Yeah, but still interesting, I suppose. Like, still interesting to see, like, you know, like those cities in that period.
Interesting to see, not interesting to play on.
I mean,
large free-running chases because there's nothing there. The tallest buildings are church spires, and even then, they're not very tall.
Yeah, I mean, part of the appeal for Assassin's Creed 1 and 2, which I loved, was literally just chasing people,
yeah,
like through rooftops and stuff like that. And it was really fun, just jumping on top of these buildings and running up roofs and trying to find creative ways to catch up with someone. If someone was on the ground and around a corner, you could jump up the side of a building and cut across the roof and stuff like that. I suppose from what you said, you can't really do that in 3.
Well, you can, but it's not that much of it, and it's not that fun because all the built up areas just seem to be made of horrible, fairly primitive buildings, unsurprisingly given the time period. You've also got the frontier, which basically means you're out in a sort of wilderness that has weather that reminds you of slightly more than British weather in terms of extremity. So you get snow, and that's about it. It's not that fun, and it's not that fun to explore, and it's just dreadful. And it also has a problem that the entire game feels like a tutorial. I felt like they were trying to introduce new mechanics and teach me how to do new things in the game until, like, the final act of the game. It was like, really? I kind of know how this works now.
I know what you mean. The latest... Sorry, not the latest, I haven't played the latest, but the one before that, the Prince of Persia game before that, the one that was cel-shaded, like, very much suffered from that, in that it was... it'd be constantly telling you how to do things, and it's like, I know, stop holding my hand through it. You know, you want to, like when you're playing a game, part of the appeal is working out how to do something.
Yeah.
Like, oh, like, if it, like if it's a platformer, it's working out, oh, how did I get from, like, this point to this point? And when it constantly says, like, you know, press X to run across a wall, or something like that, like, you feel like it's playing it for you.
Yeah, I don't...
And it's just, isn't fun.
This was worse than that. This is more like, I felt like it was a case of, okay, well, you can have the rest of the toys when you've learned how to use these. And it's like, this is not my first Assassin's Creed game, and I've been playing this for some 20 hours already. I know how the fucking thing works, dear God!
Like, what really annoys me as well is Pokemon, like, suffers from that problem
Pokemon's
as well.
Pokemon's terrible for that.
I wish to accept, right, that, like, let's have a look. I'm just going to do a quick Google search for Pokemon Red, just to, like, figure out the release date. Because Pokemon Red, when did it come out in North America? In Europe. Okay, it came out in 1999. It came out 14 years ago, right? I think that, I think that Nintendo can probably appreciate that a lot of people who play Pokemon probably played it, you know, from version Red and Red and Blue 14 years ago. These people are now adults. These people know how, you know, Pokemon works. I wish they'd give you an option to say, yes, this time I want to sit. I want to skip the tutorial on handholding.
Yeah, it's just because I want to just get into the game.
I don't need to be told that this is how you catch a Pokemon. This is how you interact with things. I just want to get into the game. I just want to start fighting and catching monsters. I don't want to hold my hand like every step of the way.
Yeah, I feel that way with regards to lots of games. It's case I want to play, but the amount of shit I have to jump through and wade through is just screw that. I'd rather play something else just because I know it won't do that to me. I can say one positive thing about Assassin's Creed 3 though. And that is the naval combat in it, which was basically, as I understand it, was coded by like a completely different team. The naval combat in it is wonderful. I loved that bit of the game.
Naval combat, as in, do you get you to have your own, control
yeah, you
the ships?
Have your own ship, okay. And you're the captain of it, and yeah, that bit's really good.
Ah.
Which means I'm rather excited for Assassin's Creed 4, because it's about pirates. They did that bit of the game right, so it might actually be good.
That's also really interesting, because, like, in most games, let's face it, most games are ruined by vehicle sections.
Oh, God.
Like, most games are ruined, by not just vehicle sections, but sections where, like, any section, really, where they modify how your character is controlled, and, like, modify what you're doing in
where
the game.
Where they mess with the core mechanics.
And it's really... Yeah, it's really interesting to sort of hear that in Assassin's Creed, where they beat you in a ship, that is actually a good part of the game, because you think that would be a part of the game where it would be most likely to fall down.
It's
and
kind
fail.
Of the opposite way around. That's because a good bit of the game, and it kind of falls down and fails at the core bit of the gameplay.
That's quite interesting, because like normally you'd be like, because normally in a game you'd be like, oh crap, I'm controlling a ship, and I want to run around and stab things. Why am I now in a ship? So it's really interesting that what you said, that they got that bit
that
right.
That bit was very good. I think an example of why Assassin's Creed 3 is so terrible is there's a crafting system. Yahtzee complains about this in his review and things, if I remember correctly. But it's not so much that it exists, it's the fact that the menus for it are so terrible that even as someone who tends to be fairly completionist orientated, I played around with it a bit and was just like, screw this, it is not worth the trouble. They were so incredibly unintuitive. It was just, who looked at this and thought, yeah, that'll do, stick it in the final game. It was like trying out an alpha version of the interface or something.
That's so fun.
And it was just a case of it felt in some ways very sloppy, and in other ways, like, they'd sort of tried to do something and given up and half-assed it half the way. So, yeah. Anyway, should probably move on to other games.
Mm. Yes, instead of just, like, having a moan about Assassin's Creed.
I love 2. I love Brotherhood, and Revelations is good too. Hopefully Black Flag will be good, but 3 was just... Gods.
Yes, let's not turn this podcast into a mourning fest.
Well,
yes.
We've said lots of positive things as well, so, you know, it's not just complaining.
Yes.
I also...
Positive vibes.
What have you played? I've given one example. What have you played?
Recently, I have been playing Disgaea.
I've heard of
the Disgaea series.
I don't really know much about it.
Yes. I can have a chat about that for a bit. I've got a PS Vita, and they had a sale on recently, and they had Disgaea 3 on the sale for like something like a tenner. So I thought, why not? I'll download that. I really enjoyed the first one, and it's really good. It's how to describe it? It's a strategy RPG, but it's a very sort of hardcore strategy RPG where they literally just stick you in the game and say, here you go, you know, here's, and there's almost no hand holding whatsoever, and it's very much a case of like, if you exploit it right, you can just become immensely powerful, and it's just very fun to see how much you can sort of almost break the mechanics of the game. Yeah, because it is sort of game where it actually advocates doing that. It actually advocates like sort of playing dirty and sort of like, you know, becoming like ridiculously powerful. I mean, I think you can get up to like level. I think your characters can get to like level 9,999 if you want. And it's just there's so much depth. On the surface, it's really simple. It's like it's just like a standard strategy RPG. It's like sort of an isometric grid, and you control characters, and you have like attack commands and spells and stuff. But the amount of depth that can go into sort of like preparing your spells and preparing your equipment, like it's got this really cool system where it's got this really cool system called Item Worlds, where you can take an item and you can sort of like travel into that
item.
That's
trippy.
It's quite trippy. You sort of travel into that item and you go down floors, and each floor is like a different encounter. So you're sort of like battling through, the floors of this item, and the farther you get up, it sort of affects once you go out, the item becomes more powerful, like depending how far you go. And it's just quite fun, and all the floors in this world are sort of like randomly generated, and it's just quite fun just how much depth there is to, and how much room there is just to completely go nuts with it. And it's also got a really, really kind of like silly story. I mean, the story of this it's Escape Free. The subtitle to Escape Free is called Absence of Detention, and it's basically set in this. It's basically set in the Netherworld, in this school in the Netherworld, like for demons, where to become an honor student you have to like Skype up class and things like that, and like not do homework and stuff. And if you actually go to class and show up in time, and stuff, your class a delinquent. And it's just quite silly and quite it's just sort of a nice refreshing game that doesn't take itself too seriously in the slightest, and it's just sort of fun to just grind about with and have a bash about on. Yeah, I know people who have like sunk like thousands of hours into it. Just because there's so much depth, yeah. Hmm. And I'm kind of happy that I've got like a sort of portable version of it now. That I can sort of just like play anytime on the train or something like that or whatever.
I can certainly see the appeal. I do tend to get kind of bored of the fact that lots of the things one can play on mobile gaming things, be it phones or handhelds. They tend to be fairly shallow, and I don't really like that. But this also sounds like it goes a bit too far for me.
Yes, it's a direct port of a PS3 game, so it's got a ridiculous amount of depth, which is, as you said, it's almost quite rare for handheld games. Because the problem with handheld games is I like the idea of handheld games. I like the idea of like literally just being able to like lie in bed, and just have something like. Just have something instantly from a face that I can play. I like that. Like for instance, like not even like you know, and that sort of before you even get to, like you know playing on the train or on the go. I like just you know, being able to relax in bed with it and just not have to like deal with like having a big TV and having to like have a console that I have to go over to and turn on and off. I just like the sort of ease of it. But I think the problem is that like most handheld games are kind of like. Dumbed down versions of you know real games, if you like it becomes very very obvious sometimes. It becomes something that you're sort of like very much aware of like while you're playing it, and that can be a bit of a distraction sometimes. If you're sort of thinking, oh, this game would be good if only it was like a console game and only if it only had these features, and if only it was paced like I suppose like. Also, in some like more story-based games, like the pacing is like way off as well, just because it's like a handheld game. Yeah, and you find like games like Metal Gear Solid, like they did a version of Metal Gear Solid for PSP called Peace Walker, and it's a great game, but you can sort of tell it's a handheld game because it's split into missions, and it's sort of.
I think I tried to play that, and it just turned me off right at the start.
Yeah, it's also the problem that because there's also obviously less buttons and a smaller screen, like the controls tend to be a little bit precarious at best sometimes, which is even further like you know the fact they had to like make things simple because of the controls like lack of buttons, sort of even further like even sort of further like dumbs it down in terms of like you know it's like console it's console counterpart.
I think for me it's the part that lots of Japanese games or sort of Japanese orientated game design, they have very little sense of self-awareness. It seems to take itself so seriously, and it's to the point where it's just a case of if you don't pull this off absolutely perfectly, I'm going to cringe. And generally speaking, they make me cringe. Occasionally, I do find Japanese games that are self-aware and hilarious. Like, I think of the Katamari series. They're so weird, but they know they're weird, and they just roll with it. Aha.
Yeah.
I know that was terrible, but...
yeah. yes. Save that one. Save that one. That's a good one. I would save that for parties.
But, it's so. I mean, Japanese games are weird but enjoyable. Do certainly exist, but for me, lots of the time, the fact that they don't seem to be aware of their own idiosyncrasies is just like, oh god.
Yeah, Desgaea is sort of very much.
Yeah, it does sound like it's a bit tongue in cheek. So aside from the fact that it sounds too deep for me. Kind of like I don't allow myself to play Civilization games because I find Well, it's like the meme involving what's it called? I've completely blanked on his name in Jumanji. Robin Williams in Jumanji.
Oh, that one, yes. Yeah. Having never seen Jumanji, I can't. I didn't know it was from that. possibly, yeah. I was born a very sheltered grown up.
Okay, so you've been playing Disgaea. Yes. What else have I been playing? Oh, I played a couple of betas. I played the Payday 2 beta.
Ooh.
I played quite a lot of the original Payday, and Payday 2, I don't want to say it's bad, because I don't think it is, but I think it was different enough that I was kind of like, I'd probably have to put in some hours to get into this.
Mm.
And the problem there is that I knew that the beta, there's experience in the game. It's so, over time you unlock things, and this one has a lot more RPG elements than the first one did. Mm. I really liked that about it. I didn't feel like I was just playing through the same map over and over again trying to beat my personal best. I felt like I was progressing with my character, and I love that they've enhanced those features in the new one. Unfortunately, I also knew that as soon as the beta was done, they were going to reset everyone's stats, which to me is a case of, right, here's a game, this looks pretty good, but I just cannot... to myself justifies putting in the hours to really get the feel for this beta, because I'm just going to lose everything anyway. And so it's like, I'm out.
Yeah, but... which is, I suppose a lot of people have argued that that's not the point of gaming, and the point of gaming is to have fun, etc. But there is a lot to be said for progression. And
progression
losing
for me
that...
is part of fun.
Yeah, exactly. And losing that progression is... yeah, it's tragic, really.
In some ways, it can be freeing if you do it in terms of Super Meat Boy, where it's a case of, oh, well, you got that far, but it doesn't matter, you can restart immediately, and so it's kind of, it doesn't matter.
Mm.
But, yeah, it was just, it put me off. But on the other hand, it looks like it could be pretty good. On the less positive side, Firefall. I've been keeping an eye on it since it appeared at various different things like E3 and the like. And, yeah, it seems like it hasn't really changed since it was unveiled many years ago. It seems to be the same stuff. Nothing's really new that's been added. It's just same thing over and over. And it was lousy. It felt dead. There were people everywhere, but I didn't really know what I was doing. I felt that the people who were helping out new people were really unpleasant.
Is Firefall... MMO, is it?
It's an MMO of sorts. It's a third person action MMO thing. You have jump packs, and yeah, I'm not really sure how else to describe it, because I really didn't feel like I got to the meat of it. I didn't see what I was trying to achieve in it. There was an amazing intro cinematic that seemed to set up some sort of world, and then didn't explain anything about how that related to the actual things that were going on in game. It seemed to be virtually ripped from a different game. And so it was a case of, okay, so there was that cool cinematic, I'm pumped, let's do some stuff. And now we're in basically the demo from E3. Okay, how are those two connected? And it just seemed to assume that I would either know or have extensively read up on it. It's like, I don't know.
Most MMOs have this problem, to be honest. It's really annoying. In terms of World of Warcraft and stuff like that, they do have tutorials at start that explain the basic mechanics. But when you get to the end game, you just feel because the community has obviously been established in WoW for years, to ask simple questions what rage should I start on? It just you feel a little bit it's very disconnecting to know that you kind of have to do a little bit of research.
Yeah, well, I think for me it was partly the fact that this was an open beta, either that or I think it was an open beta, either that or I had an invite from something, but it was sort of a proper beta, and so it was a case of most people don't know anything about the game, and yet the people answering the questions, I didn't try to ask them in sort of a rude and abusive, I did my best to be friendly, because I know it must get annoying to be asked these things, so I tried my best to figure it out. And I got a bit confused. I said, try relog. I don't know what that means. And then they were like, sigh, it means sort of log out, log back in. And it's like, oh, gee, yeah, I suppose. Or given that there's lots of in-game menus and things, I thought maybe it was a case of having to go through that and hit a refresh button inside the menu or something. It was just needless meanness.
Yeah.
And when it's a community-driven game.
Yeah, like, you find this in MMOs as well, is that, like, it can be very, very alienating for new players, because there's, like one, MMOs are complex, there's a lot of things going on, and two, people aren't, like, the most accommodating for new players. I mean, it's like that for, it's like that for another game that I've been playing, actually, Dota 2.
Okay.
Yeah, where I've played quite a bit of Dota 2. But I'm like in terms of like Dota 2, because it has like such a massive sort of learning curve, I'm still very much considered quite new, and just the community isn't the most forgiving.
I've heard that it can be fairly toxic.
Oh god, yes. I mean, when I make like simple mistakes or don't play perfectly, people say, you know, people start like, I don't know, you just get like, you know, torrents of abuse from people, and it's just really, really just, you know,
disheartening,
unsettling. Yeah, it's really disheartening and really, really unsettling, and it genuinely distracts from, like, the, you know, it genuinely distracts from the fun you have in the game, because you constantly feel as if you're, like, you know, being watched, and if you slip up, like, you know, people are going to be annoyed, and people are going to tell you they're annoyed.
I don't really understand
and you're going to get all this abuse.
Why we tolerate this kind of thing in online gaming. I mean, I've known that when I've been in online games and other things, like Bad Company 2 and the like, generally I don't stand for it. Either it's a case of, I'll argue back, because, you know, it's a case of, they care about their KD ratio sort of thing. They're being dicks to me. I can wait and just argue with them to just waste their time, because, well, you know, if you're going to be a dick to me, you know, I'm just going to take away from your experience instead. And usually this works out fairly well. And other times I've just actually been like, yeah, I'm not putting up with that, I'm out. Kind of like, I don't put up with people being homophobic or racist on servers. If it's a case of, yeah, you want to be like that, find someone else to play with.
yeah, I mean,
but I was just thinking that it speaks to, how has it got to the stage where we consider this to be acceptable conduct?
It's all about being anonymous on the internet, isn't it? Like you can just do that, isn't it? You can't, like, you never do that face to face with someone.
Some people do, though.
Yeah, I know some people do, and those people are, you know, even bigger assholes, to be honest. But it's just because it's anonymous, and I think because when people play online games, they're doing it because they're bored and they just want to log in and play a game. And if they've had a bad day, whatever, like, sometimes it's quite, I can see why it'd be quite, you know, empowering to sort of like vent on the internet, or like if you just want to relax and have a good game of like Dota or, you know, Call of Duty or whatever.
Indeed.
Well, actually, no, I'm taking back Call of Duty because that's a terrible example. Yeah, I'll use like Dota as an example, because Dota is more of a game that's like played professionally. You just want to have a good challenging match of Dota, and there's some person there that's like, you know, new, and let's face it, if someone's new and it is a team-based game, they are ruining the game for other people because they're new and because they don't really know what they're doing. Like, they are like becoming a liability to the team. I can see why. Yes, I can legitimately see why that would be annoying. But you don't have to be a dick about it. It's basically my problem, you know. I mean, people are new, like people want to like have fun, like people do want to get good at games. But it's just, it can be difficult when the community is so elitist and so intolerant.
I like that we're starting to develop things that match abusive players with other abusive players. It's a case of, yeah, if you want to be a dick, if you start to be better, then we'll put you back with the nice people. But until then, you can be in the troll pit.
I do like that idea, actually. That's quite a good idea, where people can just, like, you know, stay in, like, a pit or just shitbags, basically. Yeah. You know, just, like, argue among yourself. Just, like, you know, just argue among yourself and destroy each other. We don't care. Let all the civil people play games here. Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't mind a bit of banter. It's when it's just torrents of abuse. It's just like, what are you doing?
Yeah. I don't mind smack talk, like, haha, I got you, or whatever. Take that.
I tend to find that when, if someone manages to kill me in a way that I'm actually like, wow, then it's just like, I tend to sort of say, like, nice one, because I consider it a case of sort of a bit of good sportsmanship, but it's a case of, that was pretty damn good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because other times it's like,
yeah.
No.
And I suppose on the flip side, when people do actually say to you things like, you know, or like not even to you, but when you see like, oh, good kill, in the chats.
It generates more positive atmosphere.
Yeah, you're like, oh, cool. That's quite nice. You know, it's quite nice to see a little bit of good sportsmanship. Because what I can't stand is when you're in Call of Duty or other shooters where people imply that you're cheating.
Oh god, that's like that, really annoying.
And it's like, it's a game. Just
why would I cheat?
I got
this?
You fair and square. Game.
It makes me think of when someone was accusing me on eBay of ripping them off in terms of I'd bought something they didn't send, either they didn't send it or it got lost in the post. Either way, I didn't receive it, and they were like, "Well, what do you expect me to do? Well, either send it or refund me." And they said, "Arguing, it's like it's a 99p bag of zip ties. Why would I try to rip you off on this? It's so meaningless. Similarly, why would you bother cheating? It's like." What are you getting from this? You're not.
You'd have to cheat a lot of people out of a 99p bag of zip ties to actually make it worth their while.
The point simply being, why would I do that? Anyway, so on the negative side, we've got a lot of things like that. But my complaint with Firefall wasn't primarily that the community were unpleasant. They weren't super unpleasant. It was just like kind of needless. But that. The game was unintuitive enough that I found myself asking questions and being completely baffled. And and in terms of optimization, the game ran like crap. It was, my computer isn't top of the range, but it's good enough that most games from this generation I can play at 1920 by 1080 and crank nearly everything up to max or max. It doesn't struggle with things for the most part. This game, I had to turn things down because it just looked terrible. It was like, wow. I couldn't even run it at my native resolution because it was that bad. And something more positive. GTA 5.
Oh, yes. I'm looking... actually, to be honest, I'm a bit mixing the GTA 5 because... What really pisses me off is I am a PC gamer, and the PC port isn't coming out until a few months after the console version comes out.
Sure. I've been hearing so many different messages, and I figure that it's not going to affect me because I'm not going to buy it at launch anyway, because I can't afford to buy games at launch. That just doesn't happen.
Yes. And what also upsets me as well is the fact that, Rockstar don't have the best... sort of track record for PC ports.
I really want to play GTA 4, but I'm finding I'm having to run it on my TV, which is only 720p, because otherwise it's just so badly optimized, it just runs too badly.
Yeah, I mean, I had GTA 4 on... I mean, I played GTA 4 back in the day when I had a PS4 PS3.
I played it on 360.
And it was great. I love GTA 4. GTA 4 was a great game. And I recently, as in about a year and a half ago now, got a PC and thought, I saw GTA 4 on sale. And Steven thought, I'll buy that, it's a good game. You know, there's some good DLC that I haven't played. But it just ran so badly. I have a fairly decent PC as well. My PC runs, it runs modern games fairly well. I mean, I could play games like Bioshock Infinite without any problems. Yeah. And that's quite a demanding game. But GTA 4 just looked like crap. It was stuttering over the place. The frame rate wasn't great. It just looked muddy. It just wasn't it was so unpleasant that I stopped playing after about an hour. Which is really depressing. And I'm just, although saying that, the PC port of LA Noire was actually really good. It worked really well.
It worked fairly well for me as well. I didn't have too many problems with that. My main problem was that I couldn't use a central mechanic, but that's more my psychological problems than anything else. The central mechanic, that is to say the interrogation thing, is like,
Yes. Right. I see what you're meaning. I mean, that was a pretty good port. And as I understand, that actually had the graphics and were... probably a bit better than GTA 4, and the effects as well, just by virtue of having looked like that, the official animation was So it's probably more demanding, really, and it ran better. I just hope so badly that GTA 5 will be the same, as in it will run it'll run on my PC without any problems. It won't suffer from the whole Rockstar problem with just it running.
I've heard the reason why Red Dead Redemption didn't get ported was because essentially the code for it was such a hack job that it only runs on consoles, and trying to port it is just so much trouble that it's a case of, yeah, we can't ever feasibly see that being reasonable.
Yeah, I heard that as well, which is a massive shame. I haven't actually played it. Yeah, me too. I've heard fantastic things about it. Unfortunately, I've been spoiled on the major story.
Whereas I haven't, so don't tell me.
At the end. Yes, I'm not going to tell you. Just by being on Reddit so much and just, like, being liberable. Like, liberable.
Some word you're trying to say, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Liberable. Not liberable.
Oh, right.
Being liberal. With looking at being liberal, looking at spoilers. Like, oh, look at that. Oh, crap, I spoiled my spot of Red Dead Redemption. Yes, words. We got there in the end. It's all good.
What's confusing me at the moment is GTA Online. I've got to say, their communications with regards to this have left me just puzzled. I don't know whether it's a multiplayer mode of GTA 5 or whether it's an entirely separate game.
Yeah, I'm the same. It's a bit.
Is it an MMO? Is it GTA 5's multiplayer mode? What's going on there? I simply don't know.
Like,
it's clearly running the same engine.
I know, but I know that. But, like, to be honest, both would be pretty exciting, I think. I mean,
yeah, I've got no problem with it being both. I just feel a little annoyed that I'm here saying that, yeah, that is that the online mode for GTA 5 or is it a separate game? I don't know. I feel that they should have communicated that better because it looks interesting. I don't know whether I'd bother playing it. It's probably more trouble than I could be bothered with.
Yeah.
But I definitely want to play GTA 5. It looks fun.
Absolutely. I also like what I'm really looking the most forward to about, GTA 5 is the fact that it's not just going to be set in a city. There's going to be countryside. So I can say.
Well, I think it'll be good this time compared to San Andreas. Everyone seems to love San Andreas, and I couldn't stand
it. I've never played San Andreas, so I can't comment.
Well,
yeah.
Everyone else will say you should play it. I personally say don't bother. Have you played Vice City?
Yeah, I played Vice City.
Okay. The problem I had with San Andreas was that it was so big and there was no taxi service. There isn't a taxi service in Vice City, but the city is small enough that it's not an issue. Mm. In GTA 4, though, I don't know if you remember, but they implemented a taxi system.
Yes.
I used that most of the time when I played through GTA 4. When I played the Lost and Damned DLC, then I mostly used motorcycles because they patched them and made them really awesome. Mm. Or at least I feel like they improved the handling to the point where it was actually fun. But most of the time in GTA 4, if I didn't have to drive, I would just call for a cab.
Yeah.
I was actually pretty good at driving in it. I could do the races, no problem. It's just that it was a chore. I wanted to do the mission. I didn't want to be driving around.
It's the same with LA Noire as well, where it's just you can let your partner, like, you know, drive, and I just, like, cussed it. I did that so often just because, yeah, there's, like, nice scenery. It's pleasant. Like, the driving mechanics are suitably well done. That driving feels quite nice, but sometimes I just want to get to the meat of it. And I can see what you're saying in terms of San Andreas, where if it didn't have that, it would just get tedious having to drive to places.
Yeah, and if you messed up your driving, of course, you trash your vehicle, and then if you're out in the countryside, there was only really crappy vehicles around, like camper vans and tractors, and it's like, wow, great. So I'll get back to Civilization eventually.
It just reminds me of a game called The Getaway for PS2. I don't know if you played that.
I've heard of it, but I've not played it.
It's a fairly good game. It's basically a more realistic version of GTA set in London. It's quite good, but I remember there being one mission where the objective was to basically drive from one point to the other. But the problem is, in The Getaway, the sort of AI that the police have for, like, you know, sort of like you know how in GTA you can sort of just around, like, crazily, and the police won't really chase you unless you actually kill someone or crash into something.
Yeah.
Well, in The Getaway, it's a case of if you drove, like, slightly badly, like, outside the lines, the police would come for you. Now, you have to get the car. I believe one of the missions was, and I might be wrong on this, people may want to correct me on this, I believe one of the missions was they had to get from point A to B without damaging, like without, you know, basically being caught by the police or, like, having your, like, you know, vehicle total, like vehicle totals. But in the Getaway, if you drove slightly out of the lines, the police would come after you, and that was really frustrating, like, trying to get from point A to point B. And the worst thing was, when you got to point A, when you got to point B, there's like a huge shooting match, a huge, like, you know, gun battle, which is, like, pretty hard. And if you die in the gun battle, you have to do the driving bit again.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and you just, like, every time you die, you have to, like, do this, you know, driving bit again. You have to, like, drive so carefully and so slowly, you know, obeying all traffic lights, you know, trying to stay in the lines and stuff like that. And it's just got really tedious. I imagine San Andreas would just be like that all over and over again. Yeah.
San Andreas wasn't quite that bad, thankfully, but it was just, I found the expanse to be far too big, and I also felt that they tried to implement loads of different fun things. None of them worked that well. It was, okay, so, well, clearly you're trying to do a lot of fun stuff, but you're just not that good at doing it. GTA 4, on the other hand, I felt most of the minigames worked in a way that was at least fairly solid. I didn't necessarily enjoy all of them, but they weren't, it didn't feel quite as broken.
Yeah, and another, I don't think any of them were really imposed on you as well, were they? I mean, there was a pool minigame and a bowling minigame, I think, but they weren't imposed on you.
Yeah, there was darts as well, but most of the time they weren't required. But this, I don't know, I just felt that it felt very, the engine was starting to show its age. The places felt big in the sense of a wide expanse of land, but not big as in somewhere real. It felt more like, and here's some more desert texture, and here's some more wood texture. Right, great, okay. Whereas GTA 4 was, I felt, had so much character on every street.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, you actually felt like you could feel like you're in it, like you can feel like you're in a poor area just by like the environments that you're in, if you know what I mean. And it was just really cool. Yeah, and I hope the GTA 5 like solved the problem that San Andreas had. In the sense that I hope like the countryside is actually beautiful and feels
I think
like a proper countryside.
This time, I think if we're using the lessons they learned for GTA 4, then I think it's going to be fine. And so it should be a lot of fun because San Andreas wasn't lousy due to the area per se. Oh, that, and I found the protagonist, how can I put this, incredibly unrelatable. It was set in the early 90s, in like 1992, and you're some guy who, from what I could tell, barely had any personality whatsoever.
Aww.
And has some hood rat friends. It's like, oh, okay, I don't really care. I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, whereas with GTA 4, I actually really liked the protagonist. I thought he was just a guy, you know, just wanted to make something of himself, and you generally got like very very invested in his story.
Indeed.
And how it would end up.
I also felt he was acted very well. I remember relatively early in the game, if memory serves, when someone kidnaps Roman. Do you remember that mission?
Yes.
And you drive to a place and then you rescue him. But the voice during the mission, Nico shouts and swears at the people in his way and sort of screams about how no one messes with his family. But it was so well voice acted that it gave me chills. I thought it was really good. It was so convincing, the performance, that I sort of, it felt cinematic. When I actually look back at what the mission looked like, it doesn't actually look very fun. But just the sort of the drama of the situation and the acting involved just really enhanced it in a way that, well, I couldn't imagine in a previous GTA game. In theory, you could have done it, but it, like, the environment just was good enough that I stopped thinking about the environment, and I stopped thinking about the shooting mechanics, which, to be honest, aren't that good anymore. But that, it was good enough that it got out of the way, and I could just focus on the drama, which was rather impressive, as opposed to other times where it's a case of I'm being distracted by the other stuff.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. Like, I suppose like a great voice acting performance in a game can really, you know, sort of like, you know, sort of almost shadow like the bad points about a game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's really grating when you get. I mean, I think it's just really grating when you get terrible voice acting. I mean, a lot of Japanese games, like a lot of JRPGs, kind of suffer from this.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of suffer from really stilted, horrible voice acting, which just, I mean. Like, voice acting is very powerful. Like as you're saying, and as I was just saying, like, good voice acting can sort of, like, overshadow bad points of a game.
Dreamfall, The Longest Journey, for me, is a great example of this. The actual gameplay mechanics, they're okay. They're not great. But the voice performances are so good that it's just a case of the other stuff just melts away in the background.
Yeah.
Because you're just so sold on the character.
Whereas a bad voice acting performance can actually, you know,
yeah, it's like a record scratch.
Lessen your opinion of the game. It can, you know, if, like even if the other, even if other aspects are good, you know, the voice acting, the bad voice acting just sticks out like a sore thumb.
It makes me think of a book I'm reading at the moment. In a particular chapter, I'm assuming it must be. It mustn't be a mistake, and it must be because it's supposed to indicate how the characters talk. I don't see how, but in one section, every now and again, a character will say "must of" rather than "must have." And I mean, it's not them speaking, but as soon as I see that, it immediately pulls me out of the narrative and just makes me think about grammar pedantry. And it's just that sort of record scratch moment that you get with bad voice acting, where it's a case of, whoa, what is that? This...
Yeah, exactly.
It's... Yeah. But on the plus side, we're starting to get better at that as well. Although it's something that still, I would imagine, probably still chews up a lot of... Oh, wait, I can think of a good example. Not a good example of bad voice acting, a good example of great voice acting. Portal 2.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, Stephen Merchant was... I cannot imagine anyone else playing Mutely but Stephen Merchant.
I recently replayed it because Jenny hadn't played through it. And sort of, she just wanted to watch me play it so she could experience it. And so, yeah, we went through it, and it was just—I mean, I still love it. I mean, the wonderful line right at the start of the game. Just hold on a minute; I'm going to perform a manual override on this wall.
I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. Do it while you're watching. No, I can't. I can't do it while you're watching. I can't.
What you're doing is jumping.
I love the bit where he's, you know, trying to, like, it's a bit where you're in the turret production factory.
Yes.
And he's trying to work out how to shut it down, and, like, there's an optional scene where you can go and watch him, like doing an investigation in, like, an office.
Yes.
I can't remember what he's investigating, but he's like, okay, let's just take a survey of this room here, okay, there's a floor. Yep. Is there a floor here? I'm
and
like, yep,
precisely
there's a
floor. The scene you mean. And he sort of goes through things, and then it's like, kind of, it's just him trying to hack it, I think. And eventually, of course, you have to do it for him. Although I do like the thing of, I'm just going to go hack this door. Sort of, give me an hour. Then, if nothing's happened, come and check on me. And it was, and then of course the door's actually unlocked anyway. You just walk over and it just opens. As it happens, if you wait around long enough, because sometimes I would just wait to listen to him talk, it just opens even if you don't walk up to it. How long's that been open? He sort of says. But
it's really just top class. It really just basically, I mean, the game itself is a good game, but the voice acting, like, just
the whole thing is brought to life by their voice acting.
Yeah, like, it just absolutely makes it. Just makes it. Just, you know. I mean, I'm actually replaying it myself at the moment because Rosanna's not played it before.
Same issue.
So, yes, exactly. So we're sort of both like re-experiencing it, and it's just
it's so charming.
Like even bits I've seen before are just, you know, still like as good just because of the voice acting.
I know, it's just brilliant, and so I think it's a very exciting time we've got for games at the moment. Both in terms of independence and in terms of larger games starting to realise which bits need to be good. But I really hope that the new Call of Duty games is good. I don't know, did you play Blops 2?
No, to be honest, I have not, you know, jumped onto bandwagon Call of Duty. I just don't understand how... I just don't understand how you can make a well-refined and polished game, you know, that's... Well, just, you know... Every year, really. I mean,
it depends on how you work out the lead times. In this case, I'm only talking about the single player because I never play the multiplayers of them. I know that's supposed to be the best bit, but not really interested. But the first one, that is to say, the first modern one, as in Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, was compared to Call of Duty 3, it was just this very tight experience. The narrative was well crafted, and
A brilliant game,
Similarly, Modern Warfare 2 I thought was good. Modern Warfare 3, garbage. Modern Warfare...
Really?
I thought it was dross. Let's see. World at War, any game... I tend to find that Treyarch, the titles made by Treyarch are rubbish. But then again, in the new Infinity Ward who made Modern Warfare 3, it's garbage as well. Blops, I thought, tried to do some interesting stuff, mostly screwed it up. Blobs 2, on the other hand, it was a better built game, but I found myself so disinterested in the narrative and things it was trying to do that I closed the game and uninstalled it a few missions in. It was just like, nah, I don't want to be doing this. And the sad thing being that they were trying some things with a more branching narrative compared to the very strictly linear stuff that existed before. But I just...
Really?
It was a case of that things could happen that would change how the campaign turned out. But to me, it was a case of I don't care about the setting. It's set in the near future. There's drones and stuff. I just don't care. Modern Warfare was fun because it felt like being in a current sort of thriller/action movie. And Blops, what it tried to do, although I feel it failed, was to be a kind of psychological, trippy thing set during the Cold War. And I liked what it was trying to do, even if I feel it screwed it up. But Blops 2, wow, it's near future with occasional cutbacks to things during the Cold War, but barely any compared to what the previous game was. Yeah, not interested. I don't. If I'm playing a near future thing, I might as well play a game that's dedicated to that premise, rather than a series that has decided to veer off into this area. But yeah.
Yeah, that's quite disappointing.
But yeah, maybe Ghosts will be good. I mean, it does have fish technology.
It does have a
fish AI. In that case, you've not seen the announcements. It's just kind of a running joke about them. When discussing it during the unveil, they talked about this, and it was just really dumb. But it could be fun.
Oh, it's like, yeah, they're just like, you know, adding like, you know, fancy like, let's just like fancy jargon to make it sound like to make it sound more mysterious. Like fish AI.
Blast processing back in the day of the Mega Drive and things. Not a real thing.
Yeah.
Let's see. Should probably see about wrapping it up because I should go have some dinner.
Yeah, it's 10:30.
Indeed,
yes.
We've had a pretty good run. Not bad. I mean, I'll see whether I can edit it together. But even if I can't, then we still had a good thing for establishing how our dynamic works, because we need to just kind of sit and have a chat for a while to figure out how best it works.
Yes, I think we could definitely sort of do with that kind of structure.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like this week we're going to talk about these games, for instance.
Indeed.
And come up with a plan rather than going, oh, actually, I've been sort of playing this game, but,
So, I mean, I could talk about lots of games for ages, but, bit more structure is going to be required, but it's not like we're going to be scripting things. Maybe we should have a bit of opinion talk about some news story type things.
Some what, sorry?
Some news story type things.
Oh, right, I see, okay.
Nothing major, but like I found it really interesting that, for example, Football Manager 2014 is coming to Linux.
Oh yeah, I heard about that, actually, yeah.
I mean,
that's quite interesting.
I don't care about Football Manager, but the fact that it's coming to Linux, Metro Last Light's coming to Linux, Tropico 5 is coming to Linux, there's something going on here.
The fact that, you know, these big, you know, these kind of big popular games are coming to, you know, a platform which hasn't really seen like the light of gaming, if you will.
I mean, it's starting to get in the past. But it's just kind of interesting to see. I'm wondering what's happening with this as a shift towards it. I mean, maybe it's nothing, but I find it kind of interesting. And I'm going to do my best not to talk about it extensively. I was going to talk about it a lot, but I'm kind of, how can I put this? I don't know, I'm a bit talked out now. I think I've done the social thing. We've talked about stuff. It was really fun. But I should probably go and have a cup of tea and some dinner.
My weekend is complete.
Indeed.
You've filled my social quota for this weekend. Well done.
Yay!
Yeah.
I feel we've hit the points we came to talk about for the most part. There's more I could talk about, but wouldn't it be terrible if I was kind of out of things to say about video games?
Yes, it would be. But like your biggest passion, I mean, like you're out of things to talk about. You don't want that.
It's not my biggest passion. I have plenty of other things as well.
Like one of your big passions.
Yeah, one of my favourite hobbies type things. But then again, you haven't talked about D&D, I haven't talked about game design. Maybe we should do that next show.
Maybe we should. That sounds good to me.
Cool, right. Shall we knock it on its
head
then?
Yeah, cool. Like, let's wrap up.
Until next time.
Until next time.
Cheerio, folks.
Bye-bye.
End!